I do think my favorite quote from the last presentation was, metadata is sneaky. You could do an entire day on that. I love that. All right, so I believe this is the clicker, and this means up. All right, so let's sort of go right into it. So culture of data, and there are a lot of blog posts. There are a lot of entries out there in the world. I, by no means, in 14 and a half minutes, I'm going to give you an encyclopedia knowledge about the data journey, but I want to talk about an important part that often gets left out, and it's about the people. We talk about tools, we talk about science, we talk about beautiful spreadsheets and flows, bless you. It's really about the people. So let's take a little bit of a look about that for the data and talk about what's going on in the industry that you're going to hear about today, and whether you're upstairs or downstairs, about what's driving the business need for this data journey. So we talk about volume. We talk about complexity. We talk about speed to market. We talk about organizational disruption. I was at a meeting last week, and I asked everyone in the room to tell me who was being acquired or in the process of acquiring someone else in this industry, and the majority of the people raised their hand. So you have complete disruption going on, which means you have people challenges, people opportunities, and then you have the consequences of what happens when you don't plan and you aren't taking into account your journey and your culture. And that's marketplace stumbles, that's heroic efforts, time-consuming workflows. All of the above happen when you confront volume, complexity, and this amount of change. Now, I like heroic efforts, and I think that data, if you thought data was an animated character, and I have a friend that does animations, and he couldn't get one in time, but data has a heroic journey in most of our organizations. And this isn't, you know, representative to scale, but if you think about things that are happening in the near future, this is pretty close. 18, 19, 20, volume, complexity. You're talking about making your data do all sorts of things that it probably was never expected to do. How often are you in a meeting where there's suddenly a new data sort and there's an instant need for insights? Literally from 9:01 to 9:04 in the morning, as soon as you touch the data, you're supposed to have an insight by the end of the meeting. It happens all the time. It also must drive change. So if you walk into an organization and they've announced that they've just gotten a new tool and the tool comes up, it's immediately going to drive organizational impact, it's going to drive revenue, it's going to lower costs. This is all of the promise. So basically, if data were a superhero, it has a really long cape, and it has to fly and leap over buildings and do everything that it can to move the organization forward. And maybe that's a little bit much at first, unless you sort of planned around it. So don't abandon hope. I talk about hope in some of my sessions. Here are all the reasons why hope may lose you. And my favorite one is that when you talk about data, data is simply lost. If you've ever gotten the 20-second Excel sheet that had your contextual metadata for any sort of content and someone said, oh, we can't find it, my other favorite one is we can't unlock it. So you literally pay $5 to go online to hack your own Excel sheet, which is possible for $5, site to be disclosed later. You just don't know what to do. These are all the reasons why people start giving up hope. And this is why in your culture journey, you have to be positive and you have to bring your organization along with you. So where do we normally start? Raise of hands. What do we start with first in our data cultural journey normally?
We buy a tool.
Right? Oh, that was very effective. Okay. So we buy a tool. And it's not a bad thing to go get a wonderful service provider or a tool or something to help your organization to move forward. But the reality is that if you put the tool into the middle of a pond without a support network, it will sink. And so I found a Gartner quote that I like, which is just reaffirming that the real drivers of your data are people. It's not just the tools. Tools can move in parallel to your cultural journey, but they are not the only way there. So let's keep going. All right, so you're building your data, but you're really building your people, and what's the philosophy behind that? So this might sound a little bit soft. You're at a smart content conference. There's taxonomy, there's governance, there's metadata. There are so many wonderful things to talk about. Why am I starting with soft stuff? Well, I think the challenge is that if you walk into any organization, whether you're talking about data or you're embracing change, you're embracing a tool set, there's a lot of history there. No company is truly fresh. Someone already came from somewhere and brought along all their ideas, and part of what you have to do is take that to the side and have a real open and flexible mindset for how to move forward. You have to encourage questions. I don't know, it was pretty rare in the last couple of gigs that I was at where you'd walk into a meeting and someone would actually ask you what you thought of the data and what you thought of how they did it. It was normally presented to you. They were killing trees on the way to do it. You got the stack of paper and you walked out. And if you remember years ago, it was the weight test. You had the right amount of data if you literally could hold it up in your hand and it felt significant. So I had an old partner years ago at KPMG, and he used to put $50 on the table, and the consultant that could bring the most amount of paper got the $50 to bring to the client. Oh, bill rates, $3.25 an hour, the good old years. But the challenge is that you end up fussing with it, and it's not real. So you talk about open borders. There's my small political reference to open data borders, and really about how you move data around. There was an organization I worked with some years ago, and the TV group had data, the movie group had data, and this could be true for any, you know, content provider that you may or may not know. They love their data. And there used to be a governance committee that would construct a whole user access policy to make sure you couldn't see their data. No, you weren't allowed to touch it. So it was restricted, which meant that the quality of the data was limited and it didn't encompass the full organization. So being open, showing flexibility, and at the end of the day, you have to have commitment. If you're working with data in any organization, and remember, no organization is truly new, you have to have commitment. You are usually swimming upstream to make something happen. All right, so earning trust by empowering the business. Bringing value. So part of what we talk about when we talk about data quality, and again, just sort of skimming through some of this, is you have to publish the standards by which your data should be upheld. The organization and the people involved need to know what you're doing. You need to be transparent, you need to be clear, and you need to be open in how you move forward about the data. You have to have, I put self-service there, and I sort of debated that this morning, but accessibility and maybe self-service in the sense that even if it's not a tool-based self-service, you're enabling your users and your organization to find the data and to find the rules by which they're playing, to find the maps, to do the research on their own. You want to give people the ability to have comfort in what you're doing by being open about it. And the last part is ruthless review. And this is related to the concept of failing faster. So if data's wrong, you know, the other thing, if you go into a meeting, and I walked into a meeting somewhere about a year ago where I used to work, and someone pointed at someone else, someone pointed at someone else, and someone pointed at me, and we had the same data set and three different answers. What should happen is you agree to go back and ruthlessly review the data and come up with your correct, you know, approach to move forward. And you have to be honest about it, and it's a friendly, this is not a competitive game. You shouldn't be walking into an IT or an operations or a finance meeting thinking that you're competing with data. My data is better than yours. No, you're being open, you're acknowledging mistakes, and you're moving on. All right, so let's define the truth. This is always a fun one. Who thinks that there's only one source of data? Nobody. Good. In any organization, you're going to have multiple sources of data, whether it's new, fresh, retail, consumer, management, senior management, industry, third party, metrics. Everything's coming around from everywhere. And of course, it's completely clean. Everyone used the same identifier. The structure's the same. The taxonomy's the same. It's all fresh and current, you know, the good stuff. If you remember what microfiche is, I actually was on a consulting project not too long ago, and I said, oh, when are you going to bring in the data? And they literally brought in a pile of microfiche. And I was like, wow, do we have a reader? And they said, yeah, it's in the basement. I said, okay, I've seen this movie. The desk gets smaller, you move downstairs. So what are you actually looking for? What you have to do, and I put the golden sun around it, and again, it's the oversimplification, but the reality is you're looking for a single source of truth. What you want to try to get to is giving the organization the comfort and the knowledge and the ability to remove those individual lines and come towards the end. I am aware this is a complete oversimplification, but if you were going to 10 different sources of data, you're going to get 22 different answers. So something to think about when you're defining the truth for people, because you want them to have the confidence in that truth that you're telling. Data literacy. This is sort of fun. This is where you should be putting on your professor hat and just really having a good time with stuff. Go to the people. You must leave your office and engage with everyone who's talking with your data. You should be buying them coffees, beverages of an adult nature, taking them to parties, and explaining to them how exciting your data is. Yes, absolutely. You should have data heroes. So if you're going to have heroic efforts, why not assign a data hero? It sounds a little bit cheesy, but at the same time, if people see you coming and they know you're going to talk about metadata, they're going to smile. They will. You can believe. Talk about making data less scary. And I like how Mark had like the rows and rows. The best way to scare someone, and there's some European countries that do this really well, let's do one slide and put as many pieces of information on it as possible. How about pulling some of that out, pulling back just a little bit, and giving yourself a little bit more room to breathe so that it's not overwhelming? Because remember, people can only take in so much information. And part of the challenge about data is when we talk about big data, there's the promise and the theory that if you know everything, you will know everything. And the reality is the model of the universe is the size of the universe. And that's an important thing to remember when you engage people in your organization. Data dictionary. So if you, as a data hero with your cape on, walk down a hall and you ask someone what parts are in the data dictionary, you may not get some immediate answers. This can be as simple as, here are the fields that we're going to show you. Here are the data points we're going to talk to you about. Give them a point of reference for their journey and in that data literacy. The challenge that you have here is many people might read articles. It's sort of like self-diagnosing your own health condition. You go online, you have a spot on your head, and I've done this years ago, and you are immediately dying. Immediately, you actually don't even have time to go to urgent care. You are passing away as you sit there because the web said your spot is da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da, and it's incurable. When in reality, you know, maybe you should just brush your teeth more. But, you know, webinars, online training, one-on-one coaching. There is a concept, and I think there's an incentives part of the coaching piece. And some of the things that you can do with your data journey is not only assign your data heroes, but actually incent people to be coaches. Have them go out and sit and talk to them and coach people about the terminology of data. It makes it more accessible. It'll make people more willing to come to your meetings. It'll make them less scared to engage you about how you move forward with your organization. All right, so replacing your gut. How many times have you been in a meeting and someone says, this feels right? My absolute favorite story at an unnamed studio from years ago is when we turned on one system to validate whether or not the promotions were actually making money, and on day one, every president in the building was in a meeting by 9:05 because more than half the promotions were underwater. Years and years in effort by a sales organization to sell product that wasn't making money. Your gut is no longer good enough. So how do we actually replace the gut with something that's more solid and substantial? Basically, it should be relevant. One of the great things about data, and everyone knows this, is you can pick out points of data that are fun. It's like disco balls. By the way, there's a great website, if you're in New York City and you remember the 80s and the 90s, about all the clubs that have closed. One of my favorites was a place called Sound Factory that had a really big disco ball. It wasn't interesting, it just was bright, it made everyone happy, and that was it. It wasn't relevant to the evening. What was relevant is the name of the person you were talking to. Sorry, that was a weird memory trip. All right, timely insights can drive real-time decisions. I think part of the challenge that we deal with data is the lag. So if I have data that's 2 months old, I'm not sure if that's business actionable. I'm not sure if that gives people comfort and, you know, in knowing that the reason why your data system is there or why you're providing insights is useful if it's outdated. We talk about portability. I think one of the things about portable results is, can it be shared? Can it have meeting across divisions? A lot of times people look at the silos and the data sets as just verticals, but actually if you're looking at it from a multidimensional angle, several angles, that data can speak to different parts of the organization, and you can carry that data narrative through the organization by using that set. The other thing is just make it real. break it down, talk to people in very practical terms. This does not have to be an exercise in science. It has to be an exercise in that story and how you talk to people. And it doesn't matter if you're conveying operational metrics, if you're conveying consumer activity, if you're talking about product impact. Tell your story, bring the people along with you, and hopefully this will give you some ideas for your own data journey. And so with 10 seconds, I thank you.
Thank you, Thomas. Thank you, Thomas. Hello. Thank you. Hello. One, two. Hello. One, two.